Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million. Didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tim Allen. Andrew on the board. A little late today, but what we are here. S&P futures up 3, NASDAQ futures up 12. We haven't video earnings in a while. I'm sure the guy is, I'm not a big fan of the head of guy who runs NVIDIA, but obviously the company's done exceptionally well. So whatever it is, we'll see what happens there in terms of stock does and what it does to the rest of the market. They always seem to have some story that that lands with people. I mean, this thing back and forth with China is what they can sell and what they can't, whatever. I don't know how, wish I knew more about those chips to understand what the hell is going on, but to me it seems like a total goat bleep, but that would just be me. All right, we have Kevin.
Speaking of goat bleeps?
Oh, no, I didn't say that. Yeah, speaking of goat bleeps, here's Kevin.
Well, it just seemed to flow, didn't it?
Well, not really. I mean, you know, nothing flows with me. You know that, for God's sake. So what's up? What's up in your world? When do you guys start school? When do you start edumacating people, as my aunt used to say?
I started this week. I have two classes today.
Really? What teaching new stuff, old stuff, combo?
I'm just teaching stuff that I've taught before. So I have a informatics course that's I always have fun teaching. And I have a quality management.
Well, so the...
The quality course is lean. It's a lean course.
Andrew, how about giving me a little more volume back? I barely hear Kevin. Are these ones you... I mean, I know, I think you enjoy teaching all of them. Are these ones that you really enjoy teaching, or...
Yeah, I do. The lean class is going to be all employees of a local manufacturing company. They take the course for academic credit, so it's, you know, they're part of the curriculum. But we carve out the time for them, and so they bring real, you know, quality type of issues into the classroom. And then it looks like I have enough students for two teams this time around. So we'll choose two projects, and they will be applying everything that we learn in the classroom. They'll be applying it, the company has multiple plants, so the students are going to have to go visit each other's plants and see what's going on. And then the last class of the term, the eighth class, we bring in their management team for a presentation of what they found and what they recommend to attack it, and how to go about doing it. The other class is pretty much an initial IT class, informatics class. So it's a good first class for all of our new IT students, and I give them an overview of all aspects of technology as we go through it, and I have a lot of fun with that class too. So they're very different classes, but I really like teaching both of them.
Oh, cool! That sounds who does is the group that actually is given the, I won't say regular classes, but the guys that are doing like the, you know, accounting and engineering and all that kind of stuff, where somebody's going to try and enter Indiana or Purdue at junior, is that the same building, or is that a different place, or is that a different group?
We're all
in
the same place. Well, yeah, it's all the same place. And you know, I've taught in the business program because you've been into my business law class before, so those are good classes too. I really don't teach much in the business curriculum anymore. Since I took on IT responsibilities, that's kind of my extra course outside of the supply chain world is in the IT world.
Well, it's
it's also a chance for me to to get to know a whole bunch of IT students who, as the department chair, it's kind of important to be pretty engaged with the students.
See this thing about Microsoft where they had to bring in a bunch of people because they were getting Microsoft had police remove protesters who stormed office over work with Israeli military. That's interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen that before of you.
We've seen companies employees protest over.
It's been a while. I know people did that in Vietnam and
protest over different political stances that their companies have taken. We saw a lot of that. It's probably been a while, but it seems like that was a phenomenon of a couple of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, I know people in I won't say our day, people, but a long time ago, hopefully it's still our day, they used to demonstrate against the people that made napalm and Agent Orange and stuff, didn't they?
Yeah, but the question is, are you getting, employees involved in the protests is the question.
Yeah, I don't know. I was kind of wondering this morning. You don't never hear what you believe, or well, you believe what you believe. But there was something today about the Israelis did some kind of a raid, and I don't know who the hell they killed, some doctors and some other people. And you wonder, Kevin, what I mean. I go back to I always had a fascinating story, but I loved him as an actor. I followed Jimmy Stewart's life a little bit, and he was. He was a guy that when he, when you have a military mind guy like Lou, he's seems comfortable, at least on the, I won't say the administrative stage, that whenever you do something in the military, there's always going to be, somewhat of a bleep up, and somebody's going to get whacked that you'd rather you didn't, but that's just part of the deal, and sort of if the other guy started it, it's all on them. But I think that's the mentality of a lot of people, and it's probably the mentality you sort of need to have if you're going to. But on the same token, I'm not, as you know, I'm zero fan of Netanyahu. I'm a huge fan of Israel, but I think that guy, I think the minute the war stops, he gets voted out, but that's just one person's opinion that's never been there, so it's not worth anything. But he doesn't seem to care. If they knock off one Hamas guy, or he's somehow confident that he did, if 50 other people go down, it's okay with him. It seems to be. Now, the question is, the person who did the raid, is it okay with them? And the reason why I mentioned Jimmy Stewart is he was a bomber pilot. What did he do, 20-some or more? He ended up being a colonel or a general or something. And when he came back from there, he was absolutely, I don't think he was a drinker, but he had nightmares. He couldn't exist almost for a while because one of the nights that they had a bombing raid, they bombed the wrong town, or somebody thought that there was a munitions factory there or a ball bearing factory or something. It turns out they didn't have it, so they just bombed all these people. And I'm not sure, but I suspect that whoever ordered the raid we bleeped up. What's the big deal? It was a real big deal to him. That he had actually dropped bombs on people that he had no business dropping bombs on. Now, you could say, well, gee, they were German, they voted for Hitler, they deserved it, but that's not the way he felt. I'm like, I just wonder when I hear about these kind of bleep-up things where, shall we say, collateral damage happens, it's one thing for Netanyahu to say, what's the problem? It's quite another if you and I were the people that dropped the bomb. I think you and I'd have a problem with it, wouldn't we?
Well, I have a problem with it. Like every time one of the Wounded Warrior commercial or something like that comes on, I'm always sitting there shaking my head going, why do we do this? I would have serious reservations about that. I do believe that if you make the decision that you're going to go to war, then get in there, do it, be done with it. Don't do any of this political BS of trying to do anything. Once you're in the fight is about winning and losing. And so I guess, you know, I don't know that that's necessarily the healthiest thing, but we try to play the political angle of war just as much as we try to actually go win it. And I think that's a mistake. If you get pushed to that point where it really, you know, where you decide you really have to go to war, then just go win the damn thing and be and get it over with. That doesn't make any sense to me to just try and finesse it from there. And that's, you know, what the U.S. tried to do in Iraq, and it seems silly to me. But again, I'm saying, are we so quick on the trigger in the first place? That's where the real tragedies lie, is all the people that we leave behind who are just not functional.
I wish I had would have kept this, Kevin. There was a dude. When we went to war in Iraq, not the first time, the second time, was tallying up what he thought was going to be, the occupation and all the other stuff. He was tallying up how much money the occupation was going to cost per day, how many people were going to get, even if it was, not a lot of people. In terms of, wasn't like a civil war battle where 90 gazillion people died. If you talk about the people who didn't die, which is what you're talking about with the wounded warriors, 200 years ago they would have just died, and they would have been a statistic. Well, now they're not. And you've got to make sure they get a new leg every couple of years. But anyway, this guy totaled it all up, and he thought, when the hell was that war, Kevin? He thought we were talking about $1.5 trillion. Back then, and Bush's guy's calculation was, nowhere near that. But he just extended it out, and he wasn't even talking about pain and suffering. But when you mention about, just got to go in and win it, nobody can argue with that, except for the fact we're not talking about Gettysburg, where, I don't know, how many civilians died at Gettysburg, do you know?
No.
One. Like Aaron Cannonball went through somebody's wall and landed on some girl in bed or something. It was like one. So, yeah, if you're, Lee or whoever the hell is fighting in those things, you definitely want to just win and get the hell out of there. I mean, but when you're talking about Vietnam, when the people have infiltrated into the people that are, quote, friendlies, and in a jungle, there's no way to just go in and, quote, win, because the more people you kill, you're killing the people on your side, too. And these things get very, very complicated.
Yeah, I won't argue to the contrary with you. Not at all. It's just, people are going to die no matter how long you drag it out.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So be done with it, or don't go in the first place.
Well, I think it's the don't go in
the first place. Yeah. That would solve the problem. And this is one area where I strongly agree with Trump when it comes to Ukraine. We just, look at the toll that's taking on both countries, actually. Aggressor and the attack country. The number of people, and I can't imagine the number of people who have been injured, have permanent lifelong injuries that they have to deal with. And this is just, it's got to stop. We got to stop.
But
you're
dealing with somebody who doesn't care, Putin, it appears. And somehow or another, he still has support.
Remember, we're dealing with a lot of people who don't care. Because remember what the official policy of President Biden was. Whatever it takes for as long as it takes.
I don't know if that was his policy.
That's his words. Whatever it takes for as long as it takes. That is, so I'm willing to drag this out for for however long. There's, I remember having a conversation with you the first week of the attack and saying, how is this going to wind up as a negotiated settlement? Because that's the only way it's going to end.
Well,
and
it's
lo and behold, we're all these years later, and we're just starting to talk about a negotiated settlement. because nobody gave a damn about how, you know, all the damage that was done in the meantime.
I think people absolutely gave a damn. I think we have a guy who's an absolute aggressor, and he wants to take something back that he feels that gave away years ago before he was there that they shouldn't have. That's it in a nutshell.
He absolutely doesn't give a damn.
What?
And he absolutely doesn't give a damn.
Yeah, so I mean, he's, you know, it's like trying to appeal to Hitler. You know, these Polish people are dying over here, and by the way, some of your guys are dying too. Do you think he would have cared about that conversation?
I don't know if he would have or not.
Well, I mean, pretty much.
But in the case of Ukraine, we just haven't had the conversations.
I don't know that there wasn't any back channel things going on. You think that you can't continue to say, I mean, I don't think you can, these are mistakes Biden would have made, so Trump's doing a great job. I mean, the fact is, the thing in Alaska ended up being doing nothing.
You can put those words in my mouth, but that's not what I said. So,
well, I mean, the guy invaded, he brought everything he could, and he's still bringing everything he could. I sort of recognize that early on, and that's what he's doing, for God's sake. I mean, Lou's been talking about it. I mean, I don't know what you do here. Should you have a negotiation? Yeah, his negotiations give me everything I want. Okay, I guess.
Well, we negotiate, but if I'm telling you, if Putin isn't willing to come to the table, then we should squeeze him as much as economically as we can.
We don't seem to have the moxie to do that when other people are dying to trade with him.
I agree. And so anybody who wants to trade with them, we should be squeeze. You know, we can squeeze those too. We need European partners to really step up on that, because it's in their backyard, not ours.
Whatever it is, I don't. This idea of the sanctions, someplace somewhere, the guy has to lose on the battlefield. Because right now, as long as he can get people. How much do you pay the idiot in Korea per guy to go die in Ukraine? Have we ever seen anything like that? I guess we have. People have always had mercenaries, I suppose, huh? But on this level, have we ever had anything like that? I don't. I'm sure we have, but I mean, I'm sure one of our more historical dudes, John or Lou, would say, "Well, geez, you know, in this war, someplace people, I mean, Washington hired soldiers, didn't he?" And the British hired soldiers. I mean, I guess being mercenaries isn't exactly a new thing, but I never really saw a country do it before. Did you? I mean, who paid all the people in the Spanish Civil War? There were people paid people to go fight on the side of the loyalists and stuff, didn't they? Wasn't that part of the thing in Casablanca? I mean, there were people from other countries that, I guess, paid people to go fight there, didn't they?
Well, yeah, yeah, there have been mercenaries, and I think that's pretty well documented in history.
But I don't think I've ever seen a situation where a country said, I'll send you 20,000 guys that can get killed if you give me some oil. I mean, that seems a little new, isn't it?
So, you know, we have this, I understand that countries will act in their own act for the most part in their own economic best interests or what they perceive them to be, but at some point we got to stand for something.
And I'm not so sure what we stand for these days, but I don't. I heard something yesterday regarding the tariffs, and you know, this was on News Radio 78, and it was a guy talking about. I know nothing about the jewelry industry, and of course I mentioned this to a couple of guys yesterday. Evidently, according to this guy, a real lot of the jewelry is made in Thailand. I don't know if they're talking costume jewelry, good jewelry. I know nothing about jewelry. And he was talking about how the tariffs on Thailand, it's going to go straight to the pocketbook of the people here. He goes, there's 50,000 people, he said, in Thailand that work in the jewelry trade, and it's a pretty skilled industry. He goes, there's nobody here that does that, has the skill set, that wants to do it. He goes, The people there don't want to come here, and by the way, if they did, we wouldn't let them in. He goes, we're just paying a tariff, and it's screwing people there, and it's screwing people here, and that's where we are. And then, of course, I talked to two people. Well, nobody needs to buy that crap anyway. Well, that's sort of not the point. I mean, if you put tariffs on cola nuts, you could say, ah, nobody needs to drink Coke anyway. I guess that could always be your response, but I'm not so sure what we're getting out of this. I mean, because I think that if we don't, if we cut the imports down from Thailand, and oh, by the way, we pay taxes here. Now, the people from Thailand don't have as much money to buy stuff from here. I don't know how well thought out this all is, Kevin. I have no idea what we can do to India if they say, look, I need oil, and they got oil. I mean, what does that do to us? I mean, I don't even know how you fight that battle, do you? I mean, I honestly don't. I mean,
I'm not sure how you fight it either, and I've said this before. You know, I don't know if the current policies are good, bad, disastrous, or whatever, and we just sort of we're at the point where I think it's make your popcorn, sit back and watch, and see what the movie how the movie ends.
Well, but some of the stuff that's happening,
we're careening down a path, and you know, I don't know, it's going to reshape a whole lot of
the guy who's creating his stuff.
It's going to reshape a whole lot of the world trade situation. I'm not saying whether it's for good, for bad, or indifferent. It's different from anything we've ever seen before.
So why are you willing to let one person change us to this stage when it doesn't seem to be well thought out at all to me?
Well, it doesn't seem well thought out to you. That doesn't mean it isn't well thought out.
To who?
What, you think they're making it up as they go along?
Yeah.
I don't.
But this whole thing with buying all these companies here, I think the one person...
How many companies have we bought?
Yesterday, we're going to buy a piece of the defense companies. The direction is obvious.
No, I actually heard a Bessin interview. He said it's come up, but he doesn't see the need. They're making plenty of money on their own.
This is not like...
So when you say all these companies, we're talking about one, and I disapprove of it.
Okay, but I'm saying that. But there is, it's not like there isn't somebody in the world that has done this before and is still doing it. This is a very German fascist economy, and by the way, it seems to work for them. I don't think it works as well as ours, but they've been doing it for God knows how many years. It's the small amount of industries with their nose up the ass of government, controlled by government. And virtually impossible to break in. It's totally different than our sort of system here, which our system is not...
Actually, I don't know that it is different based on the last 20, 30 years.
It's very different. The banks own shares of all the companies, and the government controls the bank. They have way more control money-wise over... And if people want more money, they'll go to the banks. The government sort of approves it. The capital markets are not like they are here. It's not like it can't work, Kevin. It's just a shitload different than ours.
From having 1% loans out to the airlines from the COVID days, so we took debt instead of equity, BFD.
I'm not saying we have not. I'll use the term help people out. I remember the Chrysler situation. They got paid back. I remember,
you know, General Motors. Yeah, you keep going.
That doesn't justify. I mean, the fact that now we're going to be equity partners to these firms. All right, now what does that mean? Does that mean if somebody wants money, they go to the White House? Does that mean that if somebody suppose they do go forward and buy equity stakes in 10 of the remaining firms that do military stuff? You and I have a firm that's competing there. What are the chances of us getting the contract? I mean, there's all kinds of questions along the line here, and like I've seen the other thing operate in for a while over in Germany when I was there. I don't like it. It's very difficult to compete. Startups are non-existent. I mean, it's not like it's a way that you people can do business, but it's not our way. And
I'm just disagreeing with you and saying it is our way. Unfortunately,
no, it's not. We've done it on several occasions, and
historical way, but it's where we are now, and I wish we weren't.
We helped out. This is the succession we're going. We let two of the biggest railroads get together, and now Warren Buffett says, well, he has to have at least a marketing agreement with the other guy. Just because we're going down this road, I think most people, when we were done with the Chrysler situation, a lot of people didn't agree with it. Probably you didn't, probably I didn't. But fact is, they got their dough and they got out of it. People had the feeling that I had to dive in the pond and get dirty. I got out of there as soon as I did and I took a shower. It wasn't like we were going to do this forever. And now all of a sudden, maybe we'll do it forever. This is our new system. I mean, I don't see how you don't catch the tone changer. We've done it before. We probably didn't like it. We did it because we thought we had to, and we got out of it as quick as we could. I mean, we nationalized the railroads in World War I, which was probably a dumb idea, but the second it was over, we unnationalized them. The fascists would have kept them. Right? That's the German way.
Okay. But what I'm saying is, and you know, you've been railing about people with their nose up the ass of government for as long as I've known you, that's become situation normal here, much to my dismay.
Because it has happened, because we have done it, and I think to a certain extent have gotten out of it as quick as we could. Now this is a new tone. We're gonna own this company like forever, whoever the we is. We're going to own U.S. Steel forever.
Is it a new tone? Is it any more of a new tone than all of the green energy?
How does that justify going forward with this?
Put a lot of money out there, and it goes out in the form of loans that we never get back. Companies go bankrupt. And there's a whole dysfunction of that, and. What I'm saying is, how radically different are we from the Germans then? You might like to think philosophically we are, but in behaviorally, I don't think we are.
I think we're at the point.
I think we get so intertwined with some of the industries, and it just depends on whose favorite industries.
Okay, so the difference in our opinion here is, I will agree. I probably could name as many as you can. I think the idea before was, even though we did it for whatever reasons, it was probably a bad idea, and we extricated ourselves as quick as we could, because that was not us. Now the attitude is, that is us. This is cool. Let's just keep doing it. That's the problem.
I would agree with you that the attitude is, that is us, except that I don't think it's cool.
Yeah, but I don't get... Why couldn't Intel raise their money in the market like everybody else does? I mean, that's my question. What is wrong? Is there something wrong with the stock and bond market?
Maybe because they suck at what they do.
Okay, so why are we going to know more about this? How did Intel go from 90-some% of the market to like where AMD was just they were like the lapdog competitor just to say it wasn't a monopoly? Is it just
10 years later, after everybody said, I must have Intel, AMD was dominating Intel.
Okay, but this has happens all the time, Kevin. I mean, it happens in the drug companies. It happened with Sony. It happened with Polaroid. It happened with Kodak. I mean, it's not unusual for some firm to get so fat and happy that everybody just 10 years later, they're a nothing. I mean, why all of a sudden do we need to prop these guys up? If they're going that way, just let them go that way.
Well, I'm not arguing with you that is how it should happen. I guess the real question is this such an important strategic industry? Because airlines, for example, airplane manufacturing is obviously a favored industry in this company and gets a lot in this country and gets a whole lot of treatment.
Because they're our biggest exporter.
Well, they're a big exporter, but it's also strategic because we have to be able to manufacture for military, for defense. So we need a thriving aircraft manufacturing company. I suppose you could make the same case for processors and chips and all of those kinds of things. I suppose you could make the same case for that. That we are just so exposed to manufacturing, and not just overseas manufacturing, but Taiwanese manufacturing, which could could fall into the hands of China at any given time, that we have such an exposure that we need to protect those industries. Is Intel the right place to plant the flag? I don't know about that. I would personally not feel comfortable investing personally in a company that's not well run and knowingly doing it. So I don't know why I would feel comfortable with the government doing the same thing.
Well, what let's zero in, since we I think we're kind of on the same page with the government piece, but let's sort of zero in on what, you know, and Eric May brought this up years ago when he was on the show. What happens when you get this management class that does nothing but take massive bonuses, and it really, as my mother used to say, you pay them all this money thinking when the day comes and nobody else has a solution, they should have the solution because that's what you're paying them for, and at the end of the day, they got nothing. I think if you were to take some of the biggest drug companies, and if you were to look at if they weren't able to buy other startup drugs, they haven't done squat in 20 years. And yet, they're riding the top of the heap because they charge so damn much for the stuff that they always have money to most of their innovation now is in research and finding out other people and other universities and stuff that have something good and they buy it. Well, that's not exactly my idea of running a company, but what do you suppose an Intel, a place like that, or one of these drug companies that I can't, you know, let's zero in on Intel because that's something you know about. If you were to go back 10 years and you look at the innovation and you look at the amount of bonuses and money people got up top versus the return to shareholders and stuff, what kind of an abyss do you think you'd find? Because you teach classes on this. I look at, you know, here in Chicago, I'm always stunned by Commonwealth Edison. I see no innovation whatsoever. I see no maintenance of anything, and yet the people up top make a fortune and all they do is raise my rates. I mean, why
would you take any risk when you basically in Commonwealth Edison's case you have a monopoly? Why would you take any risk when you can just
Intel had
the status quo is very comfortable.
What was Intel's share of the market at one time? 92, 94?
Oh, they had a huge share. Yeah, they were the dominant ones.
But how over 10 years you just let other people just creeping and you got nothing but money, and their stock is actually lower now than it was in 2000 when it like crashed. But I mean, how does that? I'm not even sure what the smell must be like in the corporate tower. I mean, what do you do? All your people that are innovators, they leave and go somewhere else because you won't listen to them. And I guess I'm asking you, what do you think it's even like there for a decade or two?
Well, certainly the people who are innovators they will go where they can innovate. People who genuinely love to do that, the inventors, the creators, yeah, they're going to leave. And they're going to leave, and they're going to wind up at NVIDIA or someplace like that where innovation is rewarded. So, NVIDIA may face that, 10 years from now. Who knows?
So, yeah, people don't quit. You know, there's an adage that people quit their bosses, not their jobs. And I think that's very true. If you get stifled, if you don't get the opportunity to be creative, and that's what you are as a scientist, you're not going to work there. You're going to leave, and you're going to go find someplace else that is that will accommodate what you love to do. So anybody who has any mobility is going to do that, and that's probably, if we were to go back and write the history of Intel, we'd probably see a lot of that. Just like we saw a lot of that in the automotive industry in the 70s and in the 80s, and why the Japanese came in and started kicking our butts is because we didn't do a lot of investing for quite a while in innovation in the auto industry. It was more a focus on next quarter's earnings. And while earnings pressure is always going to be there, and when you have to do your quarterly reporting for the public markets, that pressure is always going to be there. As soon as you start making that your priority instead of innovation, instead of improving all of your processes, instead of just a continuous improvement type of model, then you start, it slips away from it. That's just the way it goes. That's the history of businesses everywhere.
Well, Kevin, I'm looking at a chart here of AMD, and you all the way back to 2015. I've been trading for a long time. These guys were under $5 forever. They were just the scratch, so you couldn't say that it was a total monopoly in the chip market. Intel. These guys were there. But do you know of anybody 15 years ago that went out of his way to buy an AMD machine? If it didn't say it had Intel inside, you didn't buy it.
With servers, I went the other way. I'd say I don't want the Intel in there. Or if you're going to put Intel boards in there, or if you're going to put I didn't want the AMDs. If you're going to put AMD boards, if that's standard coming with it, well, you know, we can replace it with some Intel boards. So yeah, that's kind of the way it was.
Well, I'm talking, we get to like 2016, stock is still under $2. All of a sudden, 2017 starts to percolate, and all of a sudden, it went up to 150, back down to 50, and then it got to 200. Now it's like 168. I mean, something somewhere in the last 5 or 6 years, they either Intel came down, or they went up, or both, or something. It all started to percolate.
Yeah, and I don't know the specific history between the two of Intel and AMD. That's probably something Carl's kept up on, so we have to ask him on Friday. But it could be one of two scenarios. One scenario would be that AMD just passed them by, that they just started to have better innovation, better product, and started to pass them by, while Intel sat there, stagnant. But by the same token, it may just as well be that Intel kind of died on the vine, lost its competitive advantage, that AMD isn't all that much better a company than it ever was, but Intel was not better than AMD, so it became indifferent as to which chip you got inside your computer.
I seem to recall, and again, this is a...
It could have very well become a pricing issue. And now if AMD's beating them on price and giving you essentially the same product because Intel's got no innovation anymore, then okay, then, you know, relative to each other, that's what you're going
to
see.
Wasn't it had something to do with Intel was not being used for phones? That they didn't have a phone, that the chips did not move into the phone area as fast as other people?
I don't know that one way or the other. I don't know.
I seem to recall hearing that a few times, that's when everybody started using the Taiwanese stuff for the phones.
Hey, I'm going to jump in here.
Sure.
There's actually a third scenario on Intel that people have thrown out there, that when, you know, they were the leader, it's like they were not putting the cutting edge product that they had the ability out there. And it, you know, almost like they wanted people to go through replacement cycles for 18 months to 2 years. And people basically out innovate. They weren't trying very hard to get the very best product that they could out there. So AMD was able to catch up with them that way, and that's why NVIDIA is now dominant and Intel is not, because they were basically holding back.
Really?
Well, thinking,
I mean, there was a case of them holding back.
Are you thinking complacency or just sort of an intentional?
Intentional. My understanding was it was intentional. Yeah.
Who so. Made this is, I'm going back to my
and good morning as
yeah.
I interrupt.
Well, as
good
I, morning. Well, as I go back to my
don't check out. Stay in the
yes.
conversation.
My,
oh, I'm saying, but I just said good morning.
Well, in my unlikely assignment to the Y2K double secret committee at the SIBO, I didn't learn anything about chips like you guys know, but it seemed like there was a bazillion chips out there, and it, like, all the phones would have like a chip that may have been designed for something else and it didn't pass inspection, so it wasn't a first line chip, but it could be used for like phones and stuff. I mean, people just had, you know, stuff that maybe couldn't go in a computer, but it could run the seat in your car or something like that. Well, you know, who just made all these random little chips? Was that all Intel or was that all Taiwan? Or I mean, there's chips all over the damn place. There's like 90, there's like 50 of them in everybody's car now. I mean, that are small and they're here. Who makes all those? They're not a chip for a computer. They're just, what are they? Is it all that stuff come from Taiwan?
We refer to them as chips. They're really little processors. So, you know,
who makes those? It all Taiwan?
Well, what is it? About 80% of the world market is made in Taiwan, and the lion's share of those from Taiwan Semiconductor.
So they make that kind of stuff. NVIDIA makes the real big graphics card kind of stuff that everybody wants, and Intel makes stuff still for desktops and laptops and stuff. I mean, is that kind of how it...
NVIDIA cut its teeth on graphics cards. But now, you know, they obviously make... because when we say a chip for NVIDIA, we think of a chip as something, you know, the size of your pinky finger, the fingernail on your pinky finger. But actually, a lot of these processors that they're talking about when we refer to chips are actually bigger, bulkier than that. You know, they have some significant size to them. But they really are basically computers in and of themselves.
And they do cost millions of dollars each.
Yeah, well, the thing's huge.
I mean, the NVIDIA ones are more like systems than chips.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is as big as almost as big as a computer.
Yeah. Right? You were talking about the chip use and how they can. So when the Bitcoin thing first kind of kicked off, because I was at SIBO and we had the Bitcoin futures. We beat CME by a week. Because I was kind of involved in that, we had a neighbor whose kid was getting involved in Bitcoin mining, and the way that he got the chips was he bought he created this little chip setup. He bought like 10 PCs at Best Buy that had the specific NVIDIA graphic cards in them, stripped those out, replaced them with cheaper graphic cards, and was able to set up his own mining operation. Plus, he resold the laptops that he had or the PCs that he'd stripped them out of for almost what he paid for them.
Wow.
The kid was in eighth grade and did this. And his parents probably wanted to talk to me and make sure there was nothing illegal, because this was the early days of Bitcoin and everything. And, you know, this kid was also in love with my daughter, and she had no interest in him whatsoever. It just still kills me to this day.
Yeah, you all
come on. Come on, honey. Come on.
Well, you know.
And that was the moment that I realized if you really wanted to make money off of the crypto thing, that it was going to be the parts.
So the daughter likes the quarterback and not the rich nerd.
She doesn't like the quarterback either.
Ah.
So you've met the daughter.
I know.
Do you see her dating the quarterback?
Well, does she like a tackle like Kevin?
Do what?
Kevin was a tackle. Is she like tackles, or what does she like?
I think she likes the real dorky guys that are going to sit there on a Saturday afternoon and finish writing a paper in silence.
Ah.
All right. So
which God knows, I wish I had been like that. Do what?
Yeah. How about it? So just to swing back. So why?
Yeah, sorry.
The question is, why was NVIDIA so well positioned for this? There was a time when processors were pretty standardized and very much a commodity. But in especially with gamers, but for all kinds of uses, getting into video presentation was overcoming some constraints. So, in fact, I just talked about this Monday night in class, that we identify all of these enabling technologies, and they don't all unfold at the same pace. So some of that is bandwidth, some of that is data transfer speed, some of that is processing power, there's a whole list of these things, and they all kind of emerge at their own pace, and sometimes they come together and sometimes they don't.
But one of those, you know, involving data transfer speed was graphics cards, and you know what you could present. And you can think about that over the years. What would just go on your computer monitor, let alone what you might transfer, you know, be able to transfer over the internet or across a wide area network or any, something like that. And so where they were all about this high performance type of processor that was very valuable as a graphics card for a long time, and all of a sudden became very valuable for other applications.
Well, they sort of fell into it from the graphics card into the AI stuff, right?
Very much so, and you know there may have been a strategic vision there that made a lot of sense. I don't know. I'd have to, you know, we'd have to be back in the archives and looking at the history of the company. So there may have been somebody who said, yes, we're going to have an opportunity as soon as the time is right. As soon as we get the right kind of, cloud is one of those enabling technologies. As soon as we get the ubiquitous cloud where it's a commodity, not an innovation. As soon as, you know, there might have been that kind of a vision, I don't know, or they may have just, you know, it may just be dumb luck put them in the right place.
Well, there's I assume other people make...
The first time that dumb luck made somebody a fortune.
I assume other people make graphics cards. Is there something unique to theirs, or theirs was just better and...
They were the leader in the market. They were focused on it when everybody else was more focused on general purpose.
So we're saying Intel, we've kind of beaten up on them. They don't have a graphics card. They must have something.
You would get an Intel machine that had an NVIDIA graphics card in it.
Okay, I would never have known that.
The Intel was for the processing, and the graphics card was for the, you know, doing the math, and the NVIDIA chip was for making the display really quick, and gamers liked that. And really, I think what happened was, like the kid down the street in his basement, found out that graphics cards were the best things for Bitcoin mining if you altered them a bit. So people were stripping out the NVIDIA chips to mine, and NVIDIA said, well, if people are going to do that, we're going to make chips that are specific to mining. Yeah. So I feel like that's how the progression worked.
That makes sense, I guess.
It's like other people are altering our products. Well, let's just make a product that's specific for it.
Yeah. So that, you know, that's another approach. So maybe someone was a visionary, or maybe someone just said, hey, good idea, let's pounce.
Yeah.
Well, wouldn't be the first time. I mean, that's cool. So what are you thinking? We can talk more about this on Friday, Kevin. What's your first idea on Sunday night? Irish Miami.
Sunday night. I kind of like I really like a lot about our beloved Fighting Irish. I think they have a really, really good team. They're starting a first-time quarterback. He's a sophomore. He hasn't played. I don't remember if he got any mop-up duty last year. Very, very talented. So you never know what you're going to get with a first-time starter. You could get Terry Hanratty throwing for 300 yards, in his first game and buzz bombing Purdue, or you could get, they have a really strong running game and a lot of really good running backs, and a really good offensive line. So they may not, they may not ask the quarterback to do too much, but sooner or later a quarterback's got to win you a game. So I think that's going to be it. I don't think they're going to freak out like they did in the Kelly years, being in a primetime hostile environment. Kelly used to get such a tight sphincter for that the whole team would reflect that.
I think they will win. Where do they play now? They play in the new Orange Bowl?
Yeah, probably.
So is that the same place Tampa plays? I'm not Tampa. I mean, the Dolphins.
Dolphins. Yeah, I'm sure they're playing in the same stadium as the Dolphins. I don't know where Miami plays most or all of its games.
Well, they never really had a home field. I mean, when I
never did. So it's but it's a prime time game. They're going to play at the best venue.
I remember going to the old Orange Bowl. Boy, that was a place that needed a wrecking ball.
Yeah.
I think it was even worse than the old Sugar Bowl. Ugh. Yeah, people don't even remember these places, but the worst seats ever at that game.
Oh, it's Hard Rock Stadium.
Okay.
Yeah, I knew it was like named after a casino or something.
Well, that's a successor to Joe Robbie, right?
Probably. Yeah.
Everybody's got these stadiums all.
Yeah, the Dolphins play there too. So.
All right. Well, I wonder if Miami plays. Because Tulane went back and built their own stadium, right? But it only holds like 30 something.
Yeah, they built an on campus. Yeah, Tulane's in Memphis's conference, so I pay attention to stuff like that. And when I was in college, and we would go see Memphis play Tulane down in New Orleans, if we chose to go to the game, which about half the time we didn't, it was in the Superdome, yeah. And it was 15,000 people, and just sad. So a lot of people would go, well, I've never seen the Superdome, go for like 15 minutes of the game and leave.
I think their new stadium only holds like 30 or 35,000. It's not very big.
It is. Well, what I was going to say is it looks like one of those big Texas high school stadiums. You know what I mean? Not quite a major college stadium, but... And it's nice. It's really nice. It's just, you know, it's a nice on-campus, you know, mid-level college facility.
What Texas?
Sort of like Northwestern's temporary digs on the lake.
Exactly. You know what? Exactly. That's almost exactly what it looks like. Yeah.
I just saw the women were playing flag football in there or something. It's pretty nice. I mean,
It's relatively new. That's one of the
So what do you make of the Texas is playing Ohio State, right?
Yeah. Woohoo! Yeah.
Is that Saturday? It must be Saturday.
No. Is that the Saturday noon game? Is that
the one? I think it's Saturday.
They wanted to move it to prime time, and Texas said no.
Why?
I don't know.
Probably because Ohio State will beat the crap out of them. They don't want any more audience than necessary.
Gosh, I hope so.
Well, Texas is ranked number one, right?
Yeah.
Well, so
but, what? But so you what, know what? You know what? 9 SEC teams are in the top 25. How many do you think will be in there at the end of the season?
12.
No.
They all got to play each other. They're all going
to. They play each other, and they're always ridiculously overranked. But you know, Indiana's in the top 25, and I, you know, that's based on last year.
Well, what does it do in this day and age when everybody's shooting for the national title, a little bit more of a playoff? What happens to the team who loses? Well, the Irish are what? They're like 6 and Miami's 9, so they're pretty high up there. And Texas and Ohio State are, I think, 1-2, aren't they? Or they're 1-3? Is a loser basically sucking all the way till the end of the year, or what?
No, there's 12 spots now. It used to, you know, and that, I think opening it, sorry, I just keep talking over everybody.
We're fine.
But I feel like opening it up to 12 spots allows you to lose a game.
The Irish. The Irish got in last year after losing a game early to Northern Illinois. So it doesn't eliminate you. In Notre Dame's case, their first two games are Miami and Texas A&M. So you know, those are two potential. They're two potential really nice wins to get. They're also two potential losses.
And not end of the world losses. You know, if they lose the first two games and they run the table, they could still sneak in there.
Where do you suppose the difference in, in the pros you can sort of tell this. What do you suppose the difference in budget, total NIL and everybody else coaching and everything else budget between Texas and, like, Purdue is? Can you even imagine?
Oh, a ridiculous amount of number. A ridiculous number.
To the point.
In fact, I'll bet you, Arch Manning... His NIL this year is about a little over $8 million.
But he's doing commercials and stuff, right?
It's about $7 million. I'll bet you $7 million is more than easily half the the 130 plus NCAA football programs NIL.
Okay, but then when you split,
versus the rest of them. But maybe, and I think I'm being generous there.
Yeah, but you're being generalistic as well, is it?
Yeah.
When you say NIL, how many different kinds of NIL have we identified, Kevin? About 8. How much of the 7 is him doing commercials with his family and crap that nobody else would ever do, The 7's not coming from Texas, is it?
No, it must be, but yeah.
I mean, it's hard to you can't say that Hannah Hidalgo's deal with Red Bull is coming from the Irish.
I mean, right.
You can a little bit, but it's still it's her deal. I mean, if the kid's name wasn't Manning, it wouldn't be $7 million. He wouldn't be getting the commercials, right?
Right. So,
what do you get? What do you get for like a State Farm commercial these days? Do you have any idea?
What, get paid to be in one?
Well, then you get paid every time it runs.
Yeah, and then you know if you're in a commercial. And after it's run for 13 weeks, if they keep running that commercial, you actually get more money.
Well, I'm going to have to...
There's like this graduated thing with respect to every 13 weeks, like Flo on the Progressive commercials. She continues to get... She gets automatic raises as long as they continue to use that character.
Yeah, and she makes a fortune.
So she makes a fortune. So I would not be the least bit surprised as he probably makes more than that from his regular acting career.
I have to stop by on a Sunday night at the Tripoli and talk to my buddy Scott Benjaminson, who's actually been on the air. I could get him back on if you guys wanted to. He was Rudy's brother in Rudy.
Oh, okay. I know you're in the okay.
And he's been on Chicago PD a bunch of times, and he's done a whole bunch of commercials. And you know what's interesting is people at badmouth unions. He pays his union dues, even though he's not doing much acting these days. But he what the union does, they keep track of how many times everybody's commercials run for you.
Yeah,
and he goes, one of my buddies went to Brazil or some damn place, and sees him in a commercial down there. I don't know if it was dubbed or subtitled or what it was.
Yeah,
and he calls the union up and says, "Hey, they're running my stuff in South America." He ended up getting a big check because they weren't paying him.
Nice.
He goes, they try and not pay you as much as they can running it.
Oh, I'm sure.
So it's a big deal to track it down. So he goes, who do you think makes more, the young lady from Toyota or Jake from State Farm? I bet the Toyota lady's probably still ahead of him. She started earlier.
Are you talking about AT&T?
No, the girl who's been the Toyota girl forever. The brunette?
I haven't even noticed the same. Okay.
I mean, she's been there for a decade, for God's sake.
I hadn't even noticed that. I guess we all have our types, don't we, Chief?
Well, I'm just saying the people that have been on forever are her.
Yeah, no, I know.
She's been on forever, Flo, and Jake. Those are the three that I would name as the spokesman for... Well, then there's the old guy who's a spokesman for Farmer, right?
Yeah, and he's a pretty well-known actor, too.
Yeah, and then the knucklehead with the bird. Liberty or whatever it is.
The one with the...
I think those guys do exceptionally well.
How are you not naming the girl from AT&T, man? She's a cutie.
She's adorable.
She's adorable. She's the best.
I won't go into it. We'll let you say there's pictures of her without all the clothes on. And it's pretty spectacular.
She's very attractive, actually, and she's a regular actress as well. You know the show Silicon Valley. She played one of the programmers' girlfriends, and they're Satanists. She is so opposite of the AT&T girl in that show. It's great.
Funny, Kevin, absolutely that Russell. Funny that he mentioned the word silicon.
At any rate, I'm going to leave you guys to drool over younger women for a while.
Yeah, to get ourselves in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say that they had to make her look more like a regular girl because she's anything but.
Yeah.
But so, I don't think in terms of volume, she's anywhere near close to any of those other people.
Probably not. But I don't. Now you're going to have me paying attention to all the insurance commercials this weekend.
There you go. All right, fellas.
All right, take care, bud.
I'll talk to you all soon.
Okay. Russell was having a lively debate with Kevin earlier regarding differences. I mean, you can easily cheer, you know, and like Kevin did, you can cheer and you can say, well, we've always taken pieces in companies before and this, that, and the other thing. We've done it kind of under duress, and in my opinion, we usually have tried to get out of it as quick as we could because we kind of knew it it sort of wasn't us, or at least we thought that way. And that, this could be an old guy talking about, you know, but it is definitely the fascist German system, where everybody's got their nose up the ass of government. It's very, not very competitive, and that's the way they do business, and have done it since the 30s or 20s even, or more than that before. And it, mm-hmm. and it kind of works for them, or to a certain extent. I don't like it because it stifles innovation. It locks in people that maybe aren't so innovative. It totally locks in old people versus young people. They can't. I mean, I didn't like it when I was over there when I saw it. Now, that's only one man's opinion. Now, the Trump administration, and Trump for sure, seems to think that that's the way of the future. He loves being in charge of everything. Why shouldn't I be in charge of the companies, too? But, I mean, it's not like there isn't a system out there like that sort of works. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't remember in Germany everybody having to traipse off to the guy's house and give him a suitcase or whatever they're doing, and you know, in order for it to happen. But that was just the way their system was. I mean, the banks owned a huge percentage of the big companies, and by the way, the banks were pretty much totally controlled by the government. So it was kind of an indirect mm-hmm. way of doing it, but it was there. I mean, I don't know that a new law firm or a new trader, all the traders that I worked with, they all were employees of banks. They weren't independent. I mean, I hated it being mm-hmm. from where I came from here, trading floor and other kinds of stuff. And we've been moving in that direction, and Kevin is correct in the sense that if you want to trade now, could you even get a badge and go on the floor of the CBOE? Who would clear you? What would you need in your account? $2 million? I mean, I don't. Is there anybody that's independent?
Not that I remember from the last couple of times I've been down there. It seems like everybody's affiliated with the firm. And I feel like it's been that way for several years. I'm sure there are a few independent people that, and you know what? And I know that there are some, that there are people that are not necessarily market making in the VIX space that are down there to, you know, they've got an opinion, but they're supposed to, they have an opinion and they're going to be more aggressive on trades that match up with their opinion.
I think there are
a couple of like individuals that were trying to do things like that when I was still there, but I'm not even sure if they're still there.
Well, there were people, I think, or people like that in my day that didn't really want
to. But they were fading in I left there back in 2018. Gosh, I didn't realize it'd been that long.
Yeah.
Well, 2019.
I think there's still some of the like corn options and those things still have a pit, and I bet there's still a broker in there that's probably independent. It's probably a little bit of something, but some of the brokerage firms they're not going to be one guy brokerage firms, and some of the brokerage firms are probably still independent.
It's pretty tough to be.
But I'm saying, you know, it is a system. I mean, it's not one that I like. But you know, we're kind of moving sort of that way. And I, mm-hmm. you know, I would on many occasions on the show that nobody remembers, maybe but me. You know, I've said on many occasions that, hey, if we're stupid enough to give the Bears $300 million for a stadium, we better get 30% of the Bears. When I say mm-hmm. we, the city, I mean, because that's such an obvious thing. We're essentially financing one family. Then 2 years later, we're going to say, screw you, we're moving. I mean, you can't do that. You know, so,
no.
You know, I mean, but we have in the past. Now, you know, but now we're talking about a non-competitive place where you're giving them money. Okay, well, now that's a, hopefully there's not too many of that going around, but there's some. I mean, I just wonder if the progression of, you know, a loose ending around the thing. I think I sent it to you. All the stuff I sent you, mm-hmm. probably forget. The chart of all the combinations in the defense industry in the last 50 years. Weren't you appalled when you saw that? Well, now for Trump and his gang to say, well, gee, we should take. They sort of, and Kevin's right, they sort of already are 80% of the way there. Why not just take a piece of Boeing and all the other stuff? Because, by the way, I mean, when the... do you remember the tanker contract?
No.
Well, it was a bidding war between Boeing and Airbus. And, okay. And Boeing, I think, wanted to use the 767s, and Airbus wanted to hit a four-engine, whatever it was. But I'm going to say two or three times, Airbus essentially won the contract. And every time they did, there was a big hue and cry, and it was redone and redone and redone until finally Boeing won. And for those for those that don't know, the a lot of the ones that are still in service were essentially, they weren't even 707s because they're narrower. They were like the pre-707 from the 50s, or were all the tankers. Were they the K-130s, or whatever the hell they were? And they were looking for a new tanker. And it needs to be, you know, a big plane and so forth. Well, I think they zeroed in on these 767s. Finally, Boeing ended up winning this contract. And I believe, Russell, there's been nothing but delays since day one. I don't even know if they're even working yet. They might be. If they are, it's fairly recent. But it's been a troubled contract the whole way. And, you know, if you're going to narrow it down where you let Boeing buy McDonnell Douglas, you let them buy that stuff, to where there's only one place, and all of a sudden you're feeding them these contracts at a price where they can screw up all they want and still make money. I guess, you know, if you're a transactional sort of guy like Trump is, you're going to say, wait a minute, where's our peace? I just don't want it to get that way. I mean, I think if Intel has a story to tell, they should tell it to the bond and stock market and go get their money like everybody else. Or are we going to say, or we make it, maybe we're going to say, we're not going to do that anymore. That, you know, come kiss somebody's ass in the old, or not even do that. I mean, it's just being that's being, you know, idiotic of me. That, or you just make your application to government. If we like you, we finance you. Screw the stock and bond markets. I'm not saying that couldn't work on some level or whatever. It's just not your and my world. And if somebody's going to take us there, rather than a bunch of tweets or whatever he calls them on X, I want a serious paper or a serious study by him and around him, which, of course, he'd never do. I want a serious study about here's where we're going and why it's better. I didn't want to just get there because of somebody's ego, do you?
No, not at all. You know, the thing that a lot of people are overlooking with this, with the investment in Intel, it is, part of it is already money that was earmarked to be awarded to Intel under the Chips and Science Act.
But you can always take it back.
Yeah, you can always take it back. But let me go with this. So, a big portion of it is, I think, probably about 40% of what they got is to specifically create chips for military purposes that will be, you know, that will not be shared around the world unless the government says that they're going to be shared around the world. And that is something that I do think we need to be doing. I feel like ever since COVID, we need to look around and see. We found out where we were reliant on other countries. And I think there's some places where we need to fill those gaps. And semiconductors, I think, are very, very, very high up on that list of where we need to fill those gaps.
Okay, but now take it one step further. We give them, you know, a $2 billion to do military chips, allegedly. And you and I, somehow or another, we become the major honchos at AMD, for instance, or Joe's Semiconductor or somewhere else and say, hey, we can make those chips for you for half of what those idiots are making it for. What are the chances we get that contract now?
You mean with the federal government?
Yeah.
I assume that if they go through the normal procurement thing, that there's no favoritism. Also, the thing is the type of chips that, you know, I think the type of chips that would be built for military purposes are built to spec. So, you know, you would have to be able to deliver exactly what they want. And that can be a pretty heavy lift regardless of who you are.
I'm just saying it implies favoritism.
It implies internal favoritism. But, you know, in this ended so badly, I hate using this example because I know where you're going to come at from when I bring it up. But, you know, back in the day, we didn't really have national banks. And one of the big arguments, we didn't have investment banks and traditional banking together. You know, they had been separated for about 50 years. And Clinton allowed Citigroup to, what became Citigroup, to be a traditional bank and also be an investment bank. And the argument behind allowing that to happen was that, you know, investment banks were having to compete with more integrated banks around the world.
Wasn't the argument.
I always felt like that was one of the arguments, was that, you know, you had, you know, big national banks that for when you're competing internationally, our banks just were not able to keep up because they couldn't provide the same suite of services.
What was the name of that law?
Was it Glass-Steagall
Glass-Steagall.
And he didn't, I thought you were trying to trick me.
No.
It was Glass-Steagall. And what they did was they just didn't enforce it anymore.
Well, what ended up happening, this is the encroachment that we're always talking about on the show.
Mm-hmm.
This is the encroachment.
Well, and I know where it went, but let me finish where I went, because I know that did not work well. But I do feel like some of the logic behind helping out Intel is that we are competing globally, and really we're competing globally with China, and the Chinese government, they dictate how everything works. You know, who wins contracts, who gets invested in. I had a person when I was, you know, at SIBO, and I would deal with the groups that came over from China. We did an open Q&A the first day, and somebody asked me what percentage of the Chicago Board Options Exchange is owned by the city of Chicago, because that's how business works over there. But if you're going to compete globally with an entity like China, who cheats like crazy, steals like crazy, the government's got to help out some of the local companies that compete with them. And this is a way to go about doing it.
Well, okay,
So that's where I don't think the government should be picking winners and losers.
But they are.
But on the other side of it is, if you've got, you know, if you've got an industry that is being, that the Chinese are basically stealing technology, the government is subsidizing pricing so they're able to sell things at a loss, et cetera, just to compete us out of business. Our government should step in and do something. And you can do tariffs to make it more difficult for China to sell underpriced products in the U.S. But you can't do too much to keep them from selling those underpriced products around the world. So you got to help out
let me explain real quick, and then we'll go to break on the bank thing, because you're... Mm-hmm.
You missed
an interim step here. There was an encroachment here. Encroachment, not offsides. Encroachment. Mm-hmm. Glass-Steagall wouldn't allow investment banks to be regular banks, because regular banks have a inroad into the Fed where investment banks don't.
Right.
So you didn't want Morgan Stanley to be able to take Fed money and basically piss it away on an investment. Yeah, they gave them a huge advantage in terms of interest rate, right? If you could borrow through the discount window to make an investment when everybody else had to go out to the market, that's a problem. But when the interim step that kind of you missed, well, I don't think you missed, just didn't think of it, there was something called the Bank Holding Company Act, which essentially denutted, for lack of a better term, a Southside term, Glass-Steagall. So Citibank could not buy Smith Barney, but Citigroup could own both Citibank and Smith Barney. So that they became the bank holding company. So when Glass-Steagall was repealed, I didn't like it repealed, but by the time it was repealed, it didn't do any good anymore, because it didn't matter. Goldman Sachs Holding could hold both Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan. Which essentially totally got mm-hmm. around the Citigroup thing, the Glass-Steagall thing. So by the time it was repealed, it was useless because there was a workaround, which, in my opinion, never should have happened. But
Yeah.
You know, it's a, you know, let's just say that, you know, the people who own, who make the dinners for the public schools or the lunches shouldn't be the people that drive the trucks to the public schools. But okay, we'll let Russell and Chief Inc. own both of them together, but they can't own each other. What's the difference? I mean, our government is so stupid when it comes to people doing workarounds, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, S&P futures, and, S&P futures down 75 cents. NASDAQ futures down 12. I don't see NVIDIA earnings out yet, do you? But
they're tonight after the close.
Oh, somebody on TV just said it this morning. I thought they were tonight. Because I didn't look at them yesterday. Anyway, we might do something. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. S&P futures down $1.75. NASDAQ futures down 15. We were up earlier, but we're not down a whole hell of a lot here. We're down a little bit. Again, I didn't think NVIDIA was this morning because I would have done something in there if it was this morning, or at least looked at it. They're tonight, so that's the big shtick. The Dow is up 28. I don't really see anything moving too much. Sherwin-Williams is up $1. Microsoft's up $1.50. Nothing. A few of them are down. Nothing crazy. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 21. I'd call that flat. FTSE down 3. Call that flat. CAC around up 53. That's 0.7%. So over there, everybody's waiting for NVIDIA earnings too. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 125, 0.3%. Hang Seng down 323. These guys have been on a roll, but now all of a sudden, the last couple days down. Hang Seng down 1.3%. Shanghai down 68. That's 1.8%. The industrial profits data. Evidently, China's industry is not doing so hot, as Russell was saying. 10-year is up 3 basis points, 4.28. The Bund unchanged, 2.72. Oil up 17 cents, but still stuck here at 63.42. Brent up 14 cents, 67.36. The only action in the oil patch, from what our friend Greg Pappas tells us, is heating oil is scooting up ahead of RBOB. So, There's a demand for diesel more than regular gas for some reason. Gold down 240, but still 34.30. Big move in gold yesterday, and it's only coming back a little bit. Silver down 14 cents, but 38.46. Foreign exchange, we got the euro. Dollar's a little stronger. The euro's under 116, 115.9, and the British pound's under 135, 135.4. Crypto. Up 155, 111, 172. Again, it was over 120 a week ago, or 2 weeks ago. Andrew, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs lose.
Yeah, they do. It is 7:38 here in Chicago, Wednesday, August 27th. Yeah, the Cubs lose, Sox lose, and the Diamondbacks lose. The Cubs lost to the Giants 5-2.
The trifecta.
It's our favorite thing right there. And the White Sox were against the Royals 5-4. Now, over Chicago weather, it is definitely looking a lot better here. We're at 58 degrees right now. It's going to be sunny. Just a little bit of clouds throughout the day, though. It is going to heat up through a high of 78. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 77 degrees. They're going to have pretty similar skies, partial sunshine and clouds. They're going to have a high of 101 degrees. And finally, for Chicago traffic, looking just as bad as the sports today. It is pretty heavy on nearly every inbound expressway. Early accidents coming from both the west and the south inbound lanes. excuse me, particularly on the Eisenhower, if you're coming in, could take you, let's see, sorry, where did I have it? Yeah, there we go. Coming in from Thorndale could take you 75 minutes today. Ugh. So it's going to be a slow one.
I'd turn back if I were you.
Yep. So that's all I got. Back to you.
So, Russell, I have a mechanical problem for you. Suppose you're in charge of IDOT and some idiot loses a boat in Hubbard's Cave where you can't really get a crane in there. How do you get rid of the boat?
You disassemble it.
How do you do that?
You crack it.
You get snow plows like in the movie Airplane, and you shove it out of the
cave. I think you get. You know what? For public works people, they're people that are like specialized in certain situations for emergencies. And my brother-in-law, if there's a situation like a train hits a car out here in the western suburbs, and they need somebody that comes in with a special type of chainsaw and breaks the thing up to you know clear up the accident. He's specialized in that.
Really?
Yeah, he's like the chainsaw. He works for I want to say Downers Grove, and does a lot of different things depending on the seasonality. But that's one of the things that he would be called in to do. And what knowing that and hearing him talk a little bit about what he's done in the past, I would assume that they have people that are specialized in disassembling something like that. They probably are trained on a tractor trailer got stuck under the bridge, but I think they would probably do the exact same thing. And
well, if a tractor trailer gets stuck under the bridge, you let the air out of the tires.
That would work pretty easily. So, but I also assume that there are situations where they've got to start taking some metal off of something. You'd try to back up. If you can't back up, you just start cutting some pieces off of that thing till you get it out.
Yeah, I think it went off the trailer.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They'd find some way of a ramp and drag it up or something, but it was a problem for a while.
Oh, that's
plus
that's
somebody lost worse. A nice boat, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not worried about them. If you can afford a boat, you can afford another one.
Oh, God. That's something we actually owned a boat once. We had a 16-foot Chris Craft. With a four-cylinder, those old Chris Craft runabouts.
Mm-hmm.
First three or four times we took the thing out, we had to get towed in. It was bad. And we lost a rudder and almost sunk.
You know, one of the first times I ever listened to your show, and I've never really talked to you about my history with your show, but this used to be part of my morning routine. I'd get up about 5:45 and I'd exercise for an hour and listen to you guys. And I think the first time I listened to you guys, oil was spiking up. And you guys, and all you and Pete did was talk about how few boats we may see on Lake Michigan this year because people wouldn't be able to afford to fill them up.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I don't know why that sticks with me, but I always thought that was such a funny. You know, they're like, are we going to see those guys out there with those cigarette boats that drink gasoline this hour? I don't know. That conversation always stuck with me, and we're talking about something from 25 years ago.
Well, I told you when we went to we did a seminar. Mm-hmm. It had to be right before the 2000 fiasco, the dot bomb thing.
Uh-huh.
And the seminar, these guys had it down in the Bahamas. So we had, come on, really? They had like 70 people flew to the Bahamas for a week long option seminar, or you know, 4 days or something. You know, mm-hmm. That's how much. Well, people in those days actually cared about learning how to trade rather than just, you know, whatever. It was a different world.
They were just going to have fun.
But they actually loved it and wanted to do it. I mean, but now people want to learn how to do it. They want, you know, computers to go green when they're supposed to buy them, whatever kind of crap is out there. So we get down there, and I couldn't stand the Bahamas, but we went to the, what's the name of the place where Michael Jordan has the thing on the bridge, the Atlantis?
Yeah.
That's quite a spot. So walking around, there's all these people from South America, and you know, I'm looking at, you know, I'm not a clothes kind of guy, and I look at the shoes and I go, I think those shoes cost more than my whole wardrobe type of thing. The jewelry was off the chart, and there's these huge yachts out in the harbor.
Oh my gosh!
And they're massive. You know, we're talking about I'm walking along the dock, and you know, I'm 6'4", and the bow is way the hell over my head. So I say to one of the guys, hey, what's with these things? He goes, oh, you can rent one of those for a week if you want. Really? it was like, you know, 10 grand, which for these guys, but it was, it slept like sumptuously, like eight.
Yeah.
And plus you had guys cooking for you morning, noon, and night. You had a crew. All that came for the 10 grand. And I'm going, boy, that's not horrible. You think about it.
It's not horrible. You're expected to tip an awful lot when you do that.
So I guess,
but still.
So like a dummy.
Still, no, those are pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, it's like a dummy. I go, well, what if we want to take it out? Or, you know, I wasn't going to drive it. The thing is huge. Oh, yeah, well, well, that's the problem. It's like 20 grand to fill it up. Okay, then. Evidently, it didn't get too much miles per gallon or something. Yeah, it's like 10 or 20 grand to fill up the tank if you want to move it. You're welcome to sit here at the dock and live on it for the week for 10 grand and eat and drink all you want. But if you want to move it, it's like another 20.
It was like, yeah. So
I did
that with my dad in the before he was gone. I did, and I was doing okay in the 90s. I did one of those with him where we had a couple of people take care of us. But we were sailing as opposed to, they did have to turn the engines on every once in a while, but it's cheaper if you use the wind power.
Were you guys on those?
I'll tell you that.
Were you on those windjammer cruises? Those things were great.
Yeah. That's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
One
of my sailing buddies from Cape Cod used to take those. He said they were terrific.
Yeah. We had a great time with
but
that.
But you actually had to do some work, right? Sailing?
We did have to do a little bit of work.
Yeah, I mean, you weren't like the captain, but you got to mush the sail this way and that way, right? You didn't have to go up the mast and pull one down, did you?
No. You did very little. But you were expected to do a little bit.
Did it ever get rough?
It did. It's funny because when I said that sometimes they did have to turn things on every once in a while. There was one night where the waves were very, very rough, and they to get away from it, instead of trying to sail out of it, they brought the sails down and turned the engines on and steered it in the right direction so we could actually
How fast could it go on the motor?
I have no idea.
I mean, it's not like it's 30 miles an hour or something on a sailboat. I mean,
let's just say there was copious amounts of alcohol consumed on that trip.
Well, there you go.
With a wonderful group of women from Philadelphia that we met.
Oh,
we had
yeah.
a great time.
What do you make of talking about changing?
right before I met my wife, by the way. Okay.
And that's why you said you never want to do that again. You'd rather stick with your wife.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I led you that one. I fed you that one. You know?
You did. You saved me. I hope she's not in the car listening to us. All right. Now, what are we talking about?
Well, I'm saying, what do you make of the Fed thing? Are we trying to find problems, or what are we doing here?
I don't quite understand jumping on this person who may have made a couple of mistakes. We all make a couple. I don't know that much about it. I'm sure politically he totally disagrees with her, and that's you know where a lot of this is coming from. But on the other side of it, I do think if she is found to have created some sort of financial crime. If I did mortgage fraud or something like that, I think they would take my CFA away from me. Like every year, I just refilled out my CFA paperwork, and what they say at a very high level is, no felonies and certain misdemeanors. And what they mean by misdemeanors as far as disqualifying you is financially related misdemeanors. And that's understandable. And, you know, also a financial, you know, something, you know, when they do background checks on you to work at a big investment bank, you know, I think mortgage fraud, if it's true, and I, you know, if it's true, and I really do think we should wait and see the outcome of what she's been accused of. But if it is true, I do think it would disqualify you from being a Fed governor.
Well,
I really do.
Allegedly, it happened
long
before she was a Fed governor. And it was essentially...
If it happened before she was a Fed governor, she shouldn't have been hired as a Fed governor.
Okay, but I mean, the question is...
And like, I have a former student that had a felony that he tried to change his name and got a job at a big investment bank, and they just found out and fired him.
Well, if you say that you're going to live in a house, and it turns out you rent it, now I don't know how long you have to live in it before you move out and rent it. I don't know the mortgage laws to the point where If I get a mortgage and I say I'm, and I actually do live there, but then I buy a second house, and instead of selling the other one, I rent it, am I obligated? I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying this is what she did, but am I obligated to go to the bank and say it's now a rental, goose my interest rate a half a point? I don't know that I am, necessarily. And oh, by the way, as long as the thing gets paid, who gives a crap? Now the question is, because somebody doesn't like me, do they get to sig the government on me and go through bank records, Fannie Mae records, and so forth, and go digging for me just because they don't like me? Now, if they're gonna go through 1 out of 10 every year just to review to see how sparkling clean everybody's been, not sure I'd like that either. But at least I can roll with that. But if they're gonna go look at you because they don't like you, I have a real problem with that. And some people don't seem to. Hey, if she's guilty, she's guilty. I have a real issue. I have it somewhat on decent authority. Can't name names or whatever, but I hear stuff from people that the Doge stuff, where they were allowed to get Social Security records and the one guy left the IRS because he didn't want to give the Doge people. He's been put on ice in Iceland. He's the ambassador to Iceland or something. He didn't want to give the Doge people people's income tax records because people are being singled out, evidently.
Yeah.
And I don't want everybody who votes against this guy that all of a sudden somebody shows up and goes through every mortgage application they've ever done. Now, some people say, as long as they're Democrats and as long as they're guilty, what's the difference? I'm not in that camp. I'm just not in that camp. I don't think they had any right tapping Elliot Spitzer's phone line, see if they can find something, because I don't think that's the America that I want and seemingly have had, but maybe not. Now somebody's going to say, "Well, geez, Biden did this to somebody." I don't care who did it. If he did it, he was wrong too. I mean, this is not the people who are voting. The two guys on the board of the Fed that are voting for Trump now that are going to perform oral sex on him to get the job if they want it. Did they look at their mortgage statements too? And if the answer is no, I got a problem. That's just me.
Mm-hmm.
But I seem to be alone on the show with this thought. I mean, everybody else seems to think, "Oh, she's guilty. What's the difference?" That it's okay to single people out. I don't believe that here.
Yeah. So basically, you can't have two primary residences, but she maybe claimed them. That could have been a mistake.
Probably not.
You know what? I mean, maybe not. I'm an idiot. I always think the best of people. I really do. And I got to stop thinking like that.
Okay, let me ask you.
I'm too old to think like that.
Let me ask you a personal question. Not personal. You guys have a nice home in the Western Burbs. You're thinking about shifting. I'm not talking
about school.
Whatever. Yeah. You go buy a house in Indianapolis.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you try and sell this one, and somebody says, "What are you selling it for? I'll pay you $5,000 a month. I'm coming here as a temporary teacher for DuPage County or DuPage High School College. I'll give you $5,000 a month for 2 years. You rent it to them." Now, what are you obligated to do? Does this make you a criminal? I mean, I don't know the rule. Does this?
Well, no. I would just declare the other one my primary residence.
Okay, but now this one.
But what she did was she declared two primary residences at the same time.
Okay, but now do you have to go?
And I think for tax purposes, you get a different break on one versus the other.
My point is, if your mortgage here is 3%, and I don't know the answer to this, by the way, if your mortgage here is 3%, are you obligated to go to your mortgage guy and say, "I'm now renting it out. Hit me with 7. I don't think you are.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the law there. Do you?
No, I do not know the law. Well, you get if it's a primary residence, you get a lower.
I know, but you've already had it. You've lived there for 10 years or more. Now, if you decide you want to rent it out some other place because you're prime, what are you obligated to do for your current mortgage? I don't think you're obligated to do anything, but maybe you are.
I read an article and it says that she's claiming two primary residences, but it's unclear whether she informed the lenders that that one was and one wasn't. And I think I do think that's where if she had told them both that they were primary, that might have made a difference in the interest rate. I'm not good with this, and this is just going to sound so freaking arrogant. I've never had a mortgage. Okay. I've always just bought everything that I've lived in outright.
All right, well, that makes it easier.
Yeah, it does. And it does. I've never had a mortgage. I say that I do have a mortgage, and this is where I'm sitting here thinking, I wonder if I'm in trouble. I bought a, when my father died, my sister still lived with him, and she was 50 years old. I took the equity out of my dad's house and put a down payment on a condo and my sister doesn't have any credit. So I own a condo in Memphis that I do have a mortgage on, and she pays me and I pay the mortgage.
Oh boy. I hope you're not a senator someday. Oops.
Yeah, no, I don't know if they think I live there or not. I really don't. I know when I told the bank, when I went to the bank, I told them what I was doing. But yeah, they know that I don't live there. So I don't really know. I should look at that. I'm gonna look at my mortgage stuff because, you know, and you'll love this. Memphis, Tennessee, $450 a month mortgage.
God,
I know. I pay more in taxes on the house I
when
live
we
in.
My mom and dad bought this place, you know, right shortly before he died, the 56th and Bishop. I think our mortgage, because my aunt used to walk around the corner with me, and Dan was in the buggy. We'd walk around the corner, and I think the mortgage was $12. And guess what? He'd give me a dollar back. He loved my mother. He's an old guy.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And he'd give my brother a sucker. And my aunt was all pissed off that he didn't get a dollar as well. And my mother goes, if he gave him a dollar too, he'd be giving us back 20% of the mortgage, for God's sake. But it was, you know, I'm sure he must have put most down. And anyway, but it's
fantastic.
But the idea of singling people out, it's not our way.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not that he wants to fire this woman because she may have, you know, misstated or misled people with respect to her mortgage. I'm sure he wants to fire her because he doesn't like her.
Well,
and when I say like her, I doesn't mean it's not a personal thing. They may have never even met, but there's something politically that he doesn't like about her.
She's voting with Powell.
Okay. Well, they're all voting with Powell.
No, they had two dissenters last month, the two guys who want the job.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, I mean, Trump was just convicted of that. Of lying to me. Now, why?
Well, and that's what I think is funny also is that it's almost like he's using the same thing that was used against him against somebody else. And I wonder if that is part of it.
Well,
they did that one to me. I'm going to do that one to one of theirs.
I don't think, and as much as I dislike the man, I don't really think it's the government's job to. The thought that somebody can put something over on one of these banks as big as they are, I don't know if that's the government's job. I mean,
no, it's not.
I think it isn't. I think it absolutely is not. And I mean, I don't suppose you go in with somebody for a loan and you say we're going to make 10,000 widgets next year, and all of a sudden you don't make any. You know, I guess your intention was to make 10,000. Is it a lie? Is it an exaggeration? Is it fraud? Well, if it's fraud, I guess it's a problem. But how do you?
Yeah.
You know, I mean. This whole thing, I think banks are big enough to take care of themselves, to be honest with you.
Exactly. And, you know,
which doesn't mean you can fraud them. I mean, I'm not saying that.
No, but, and I believe the thing that Trump got in trouble for was getting a mortgage from a bank with a valuation that was higher than whatever property. Like, you know, let's say I live in a $100 house right now. And, you know, and like I said, I don't have a mortgage and I need to borrow some money, and they give me a $150 loan against my house.
Well,
you know, even though the value is $100. Well, if they find me a solid credit, et cetera, and they think I'm going to pay it off, I mean, banks are not stupid.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Well,
at that level, they are. The reason why I say that, I'm not accusing Jamie Dimon to be a dummy. I'm not. But I read this, who the hell, one of the listeners, when all this was happening, it might have been when Trump was running the first time or something, I don't know. But one of the big banks, he had screwed up with them, you know, he had declared bankruptcy a couple times with his casinos or wherever the hell it was. And they were on the hook to him for like a lot. And one side of the bank came down and said, we're not doing any business like ever with this guy again. Meanwhile, he comes in with like another loan that they thought looked pretty good. So like the same day or the same week, they were like banning him from one side of the bank. The other side of the bank gave him a new loan. I mean, it was a bizarre world. Yeah. It had, you know, I don't think he went bankrupt on purpose. I mean, why the hell would anybody do that? Even him. I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff in his past that has to do not just with him, but with these banks. One part can't wait to, a lady or a guy, couldn't wait to throw him out of the bank. Meanwhile, somebody at another branch was giving him a new loan or something. I mean, Russell, if we wrote a book like this and called it fiction, we couldn't sell it. Nobody'd believe it.
No. You're absolutely right.
And, you know, and I when everybody says he screwed up huge in New Jersey, I actually know something about that industry. I feel sorry for the guy in the sense that the Atlantic City, they put all this stuff together, and all of a sudden there's this massive Indian casino up in Connecticut, which is closer to New York, and they ended up with it. You know the deal they got there? The state gets, I don't know, I saw this, don't quote me on the number, the state ends up with like 1 or 2 or 4% of the gross of the slot machines. So they get this huge deal from the casino there. All of a sudden, he gets competition from some place that is paying next to nothing for the property, paying nothing. That shouldn't happen to anybody. I mean, he put up a place legitimately and you know, paid the cost and all that stuff, and all of a sudden, he's getting undercut by an Indian casino that somehow got in business for like next to nothing compared to what it cost him. That's not right. I don't even want that happening to him. I try and be fair on this. I mean, to a huge extent, that I don't want him being tried for lying to a bank. The banks can check him out if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm saying. No, they can't. You know, I mean, yeah. I don't. And plus, anybody, you know, everybody says all I do is rail on the guy. Well, he deserves it in a lot of ways, but I don't think anybody in this country should have a bill, you know, with a legal bill against the government like $40 million. Look at this lady. If she sues the government, I think, you know what, Andrew, look this up. I'm going to say a Fed governor makes $240,000. I'm within $20,000 here. If somebody is going to sue the administration over her firing, I have to believe you have to go to a real law firm. We're not talking about Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. I'll bet the retainer is $100,000.
Oh, easily.
So the legal system
easily,
is not
easily.
Yeah, the legal system,
and
yeah,
that gets you 2 weeks of work.
Yeah, and how is the legal system going to work for this lady? How much power does he have over her that he shouldn't have? How much power does the Justice Department? What if they came after you or me?
Exactly. I wouldn't know what to do. I know exactly what I would do. My best friend, I'm moving in with him at the marijuana farm in Thailand that he owns.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll still call in on Wednesdays.
I just might be
a lot more interesting from there than
yeah.
I am.
Yeah. Well, why do
with just coffee?
Why do regular Americans not have any idea of what's going on here with the Fed coming after people and how the judge? Could you and I even enter the legal system with any kind of a lawsuit or with anything? Nothing. How could we?
Probably not. Probably too expensive. Hey, one last little funny thing. But you know, we've got a person on the ground in D.C. and she said that that there are people that are like taking a gap year and stuff because they don't want to be in D.C. because the National Guard's there.
I think that is
absolutely silly because, you know, they just had the longest streak without murders in D.C. with the National Guard wandering around. I mean, this is what I told Maggie. I said, you know, I feel better about you being there this year than I did 2 years ago.
I think everybody needs their own personal.
I would love that, yeah. Especially having two. You know, I need one down at Purdue and one down at one over in D.C. to keep an eye on those girls.
Neither Hitler, Mussolini, or Putin and their secret police. The secret police never wore masks, but ours are.
Yeah, I think you meant Lenin and Stalin.
Yeah,
but Putin, Stalin, same thing.
What do you mean? Putin was in the KGB.
Oh, I know he was.
You think he doesn't have a secret police?
Oh, I'm sure he. I'm sure he's got all kinds of fun stuff.
Anyway,
all kinds of fun toys.
Are you back down there teaching already, or what are you doing?
No, I mean the quarter started back. I only teach online this week, and I have to be there Monday through Friday the next 5 weeks, so I decided. And tomorrow's my birthday, so I've decided that I was not going to. Going to work.
Happy 29.
You know, it's funny, if you double that, if you multiply that number by two, you got it.
Well, good for you. You're young. You still fit in your old cardigan sweaters. It's a good thing.
I do. Actually, I've lost a little weight, which creates an opportunity to do some shopping.
Okay. Where's our girlfriend this morning?
She's teaching a class down at Purdue. She's doing her job.
Well, we got to get her back in.
Terrific. As soon as somebody wants to give up a regular slot, she may take it.
All right. Well, that's cool. Yeah. SP futures down 3. NASDAQ futures down 16. What's your prediction tonight? Are you long, short, neutral?
NVIDIA, it's got, you know what, I had to do a little work on their cash flows and stuff. This thing's still got some upside. It's ridiculous how much, and you can see it. You can see what the revenues are going to be pretty solidly over the next 2 years, because you see the planned spending of all the big tech companies going to NVIDIA. There are no cracks in that yet.
All right. Well, over 200. It's trading 182.
Average moves around 7.5%, so maybe not that high.
All right, bud. We'll have a nice week. We'll talk at you next week. Happy Labor Day. Happy long weekend, Labor Day.
Oh, yeah.
Happy 3-day weekend. SP futures down 4, NASDAQ futures down 21. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.